नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामीनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यादिशतारिणे। So today is the last class, and while I was preparing for this class today, I realized that there is so much to cover. I don't know how much I'll be able to, but in general, what I actually want to do in today's class is first, consider Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction. 500 years back, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes a prediction, a rather impossible prediction, that this Krishna consciousness movement would spread in every town and village all over the world. Now, if we consider the impossibility of this prediction, then first of all we have to consider that at that time, actually, people were to speak of town and village. People didn't even know how many continents are there in this planet. Because that prediction was made before Columbus discovered America. So people didn't even know that a continent called America existed, or Australia. So at a time like that, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made a prediction like that. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement actually went through a very ominous period. Gradually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings were practically lost. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dham also was lost. People used to think that Navadvip, they didn't have any understanding of nine islands of Navadvip. So they used to think that there are, this Navadvip is the other side of the river Ganges. And they, out of their speculation, not even speculation, out of their unscrupulous arrangements, they pointed out that this is Mahaprabhu's birthplace, this is Vishnu Priya Devi's father's house, and so on and so forth. So they actually created another Navadvip, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dham disappeared. Soon after Mahaprabhu's disappearance from this planet, soon after his disappearance pastime from this planet, his dham also disappeared, and gradually his teachings also disappeared. His teachings, as I mentioned briefly yesterday, that in the name of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, all kinds of unscrupulous people started to introduce their own mental concoction. They didn't have the understanding, or they didn't have that acceptance that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Radharani is the personification of His pleasure potency. Actually, those people are a bunch of illiterate people, just village people without any education, without any understanding. And they heard about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings and Radha Krishna's pastimes, and they started to imitate those pastimes. And different sampradayas actually developed. And the understanding was that the male used to proclaim that they are Krishna, or at least they used to think that they are Krishna, and they would find some woman, and that woman would become Radha. And what goes on after that, there is no need to elaborate on. And then, and as a result of that, the intelligent class of people, people with refined nature, just stayed away from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because they thought that if this is Mahaprabhu's teachings, we don't want to have anything to do with this. And as a result of that, Mahaprabhu became practically oblivion from the educated, intelligent community. They didn't want to have anything to do with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we have to remember that those days, the books were not available. Books describing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's divine pastimes, like Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, Bhakti Ratnakar, the writings of the Goswamis, they were not available. But then, when practically Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings were lost and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dham disappeared from our eyes, at a time like that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur actually started the revival work of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. And it's very interesting to note also that at that time, this part of India, Bengal, was completely under the British domination and very heavily influenced by the British culture. Like people used to, the educated class of people used to consider that the British education is the education. They completely rejected the Vedic culture, Vedic education, Vedic wisdom. And as a result of that, the Vedic scriptures, which actually deals with absolute truth, became a myth. And still today they call the Purans and all the Vedic literatures as they call it mythology. And it became a myth. That means it's fictitious. Never really happened. And instead, they actually introduced all kinds of fictions and novels and then through British education, they also introduced Christianity. It's the missionaries who came to India those days and established the schools. So they used to get, along with the British English education, they used to get a heavy dose of Christian influence. Although they did not practically convert into Christianity, most of them, but in their subconscious, the subtle influence was very, very prominent. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur was actually a product of that culture. He had that education, and he also accepted a very responsible position in the British government as a deputy magistrate. He was actually situated in a position that everybody, every Indian those days would covet. Bhakti Vinod Thakur also is such a brilliant personality that not only the Christians, even the different religions that were actually coming up to counter the British influence or influence of Christianity, like Brahma Samaj, etc., they were trying to get Bhakti Vinod Thakur to their fold. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur, around that time, came across Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. He got to know about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and as a result of that, he was looking for Chaitanya Charitamrita. He heard that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings and pastimes have been presented in a very, very brilliant way by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in a book called Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur had to literally look around everywhere to get this Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I'm talking about just about 100 years ago, 130 years ago. Bhakti Vinod Thakur couldn't find, and finally he got it in a village in Orissa. He got the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And that was it. As he started to read Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was sold out to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, our understanding is Bhaktivinoda Thakur is an eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna. But still, the way the pastime goes, like in the beginning Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't know about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he didn't have any understanding about the profundity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. But then, when he became exposed, he was completely sold out to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur started to print books, started to write himself. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written some books, which is actually the most brilliant presentation of Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta. There is one book I will suggest that you all read. It's available now in English also. It's called Jaiva Dharma. Jaiva Dharma is the essence of the entire Vedic understanding in today's context. So in this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur presented, and he himself wrote, like he was such a brilliant personality. Incidentally, that poetry that I told you that I'll get printed, it's getting printed, getting copied. So it'll be available after the class. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's biography actually says that he used to go to bed quite early, around 7:30, 8 o'clock. And he used to get up at 12 o'clock. And he used to chant his rounds. And then he used to start writing. And he would write till about 6:30. Then he would take a little, then he would take a break, take his bath, and go to work. And he was a deputy magistrate. So naturally, he had lots of responsibility and heaps of work to attend to. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to finish off all his work by 3 o'clock in the afternoon instead of 5. And he used to come home. And in this way, his life was so full with productive activities. And in this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually started the revival of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Now, we can actually see that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, within a very short time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spread Krishna consciousness all over India. And then, even after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disappearance, the movement was spreading with a tremendous momentum. By the push of mainly with his followers like Nityananda Prabhu, Janava Mata, and then Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, Shyamananda Prabhu. And then gradually there was a decline. And this gradual decline practically reached the rock bottom. And then, around that time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared and he gave this movement an upward thrust. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a high-ranking government officer, so he didn't have actually the opportunity to preach that effectively or himself. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is to pray to Lord Jagannath to send somebody who would help him in this mission. And as a result of that prayer of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared. Another extremely brilliant personality. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur literally gave Bhaktivinoda Thakur's plan a practical shape. And now, one thing, of course, I should mention here, which is very important to note, is that Bhakti Vinod Thakur could foresee that in order to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, in every town and village, we need an organized structure or an institution. And he gave the blueprint of that institution through his Namhat. He gave a very thorough structure. And basing on that structure, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur established his mission, which was known as Gauriya Mission. And he spread this movement throughout India. And he created a wonderful influence in the intellectual community at that time. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself was an extremely brilliant personality. Naturally, he attracted also very high-class individuals from the intellectual Indian community. And many high-ranking people from the society also became affected by him. And in this way, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established his Gauriya Math all over India. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also emphasized the importance of a structured organization or institution. He gave an incredible amount of emphasis on the importance of a collective management through a governing body. But unfortunately, after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance, his institution gradually started to disintegrate. And this disintegration actually started from two factions. Soon after his disappearance, one group decided to follow his instruction of maintaining the institution through collective management through the governing body. But another group came up and said that we need an acharya for this institution. Because how a spiritual organization, a spiritual institution has to have an acharya. How can a spiritual institution run by a group of managers? And this conflict in due course of time actually finished off the structure of Gauriya Math. They started to fight, and Prabhupada pointed out the fight is still going on. They went to courts, they were fighting in the court, and they were fighting also individually. Fist fights, stick fights, some gun fights, and I don't think they went into guns, but they used swords and all, and people were even murdered. So the unfortunate development there. And in this way, we see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Gauriya Math gradually became very, very weak. But one of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples, who Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself also gave a lot of recognition, although he didn't have much of his personal association, is Srila Prabhupada. And we see that Prabhupada just stayed away from all this turmoil. He just continued to prepare himself to fulfill the mission of his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's dream was to spread to take this Krishna consciousness movement to the West. Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we see both of them were fully convinced that this Krishna consciousness movement would spread all over the world in every town and village. Didn't have a slightest doubt. And that's why we notice, like, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, although he is writing in Sanskrit and Bengali, he also wrote in English. As if Bhaktivinoda Thakur knew that a time will come when this movement actually will spread throughout the world through English language. Because English is the international language. And he considered that this movement is going to spread. And English will be very, very important language. Therefore he presented his writings in English as well. And that poetry that I mentioned yesterday, like you will see there are 22 stanzas, and you will see like in these 22 stanzas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually has given the entire philosophy of Krishna consciousness. He deals with the materialistic way of life. He deals with man's attachment to his body, forgetting the soul. And then those who are even pursuing the spiritual path to understand their spiritual identity, they are caught up in the complexities of impersonalism. And then he proclaims that here is the Vaishnava who is going to show the way. And then finally he shows how a living entity goes back to the spiritual sky. As I was, the last stanza goes like, O Sharagrahi Vaishnava soul, thou art an angel fair, lead me on to Vrindavan and spirit's power declare. There rests my soul from the matters free upon my lover's arms. Eternal peace and joy, some adjective I forgot, and joy, and the chanting charm. So this is how Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing how the spirit soul goes back and becoming free from the bondage of matter and rests in the embrace of his lover's arms. That's at Krishna's lotus feet. And so such brilliant presentation of Krishna consciousness. And that's why it's very important that we recognize our heritage. And if we properly consider our heritage, then we can see that it is a very, very special spiritual family. The most aristocratic spiritual family. And to be a part of this family will naturally make us feel spiritually proud. Like it is an inconceivable good fortune that somehow or other we have become linked up to this family. And these are our ancestors. Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Such incredibly colossal spiritual personalities. Srila Prabhupada, he had the full conviction also that Krishna consciousness would spread all over the world. And he saw how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted it to happen. And in the first meeting, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told Srila Prabhupada that why don't you take up this responsibility of spreading this movement through English language throughout the world. And that first, the instruction from the first meeting became Srila Prabhupada's, the guiding factor for his life. And then while all these conflicts and turmoil was going on in Gauriyamath, Prabhupada was simply preparing himself to spread this movement all over the world. And then finally, at a very old age, Srila Prabhupada manages to go to the West. Once Prabhupada was describing about his own life to one of his old acquaintances in Mayapur, there's a very well-known Ayurvedic doctor who came to treat Srila Prabhupada from Calcutta. That gentleman was about 90 years old. He was older than Prabhupada. Prabhupada was 82 at that time. And this gentleman was 90 years old and he was blind. But they were old acquaintance. And then Prabhupada was telling him how he always wanted to go to the West and preach. And this way he was struggling through his life and throughout his life. And then ultimately when he went to the West, he was old and he didn't have any resources, he didn't have any money. At the age of 70, he goes to the West. And when he went there, then things just started to happen. And he was telling that all along I was trying to go to the West and spread Krishna consciousness. Then finally when Krishna sent me, he sent me there as a pauper. But then he made all kinds of wonderful things start to happen. And in this way, Krishna made it clear to him that it is he who was actually spreading this movement. And Prabhupada himself also used to say, which we used to think that it was due to Srila Prabhupada's humble disposition that Prabhupada was speaking like that. Now, whenever someone glorified Srila Prabhupada for his achievement, Prabhupada used to say, no, I haven't done anything. It's my Guru Maharaj and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that did everything. And they simply gave me the credit. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did everything and he simply gave me the credit. And Prabhupada was explaining, like, it was not just that he was speaking like that. He really believed in that and he was convinced about that. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually made this movement spread all over the world. And he gave Srila Prabhupada the credit for this achievement. And a proper analysis will also make it clear that the prediction that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made 400 years ago, he actually sent Srila Prabhupada to fulfill that prediction. Srila Prabhupada's appearance in this planet was not just a chance happening. It's not just an accidental happening. It was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's divine arrangement. And we see also how wonderfully it happened. Within the short span of 10 years' time, Krishna consciousness movement spread all over the world. And the way it spread, it's amazing. Like, those who are not present at that time, I can tell you that ISKCON those days was quite different from the way it is today. It was a very, very vibrant movement. It was like when I joined, I actually joined in Mayapur. I had an elderly Indian god brother, and one day he was telling me about the amazing thing about this movement is that the way the devotees are committed to Srila Prabhupada. He said they have such love and confidence on Srila Prabhupada that whatever Prabhupada says, that they would do that without even batting an eyelid. He said, if Prabhupada tells somebody to jump from the top of a building, jump from the top of a skyscraper, the devotees would do that. So that kind of faith devotees had in Srila Prabhupada. And now I will embark on another point, another area, that is, Srila Prabhupada knew that Krishna consciousness movement is not going to spread all over the world within just a few years' time. To effectively spread all over the world in every town and village, it'll take a long time. Maybe it may even take generations. And in order to make it happen, in order to continue this movement to spread in that way, Prabhupada saw the importance of an institution. Therefore, Prabhupada created ISKCON. And here again, we should remember that it was not just Prabhupada's own idea. Prabhupada was actually carrying on the plan of Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. These two other acharyas who were very much concerned about spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, both of them saw the importance of an institution. Because as opposed to the institution, if it was just a personality, then only as long as the personality will be present, the movement will have the momentum. And as soon as the personality would leave, then everything will fall apart. Just the way it happens with most of the other spiritual organizations. Like the organizations that grew around the personality, soon after the disappearance of the personality, the structure actually falls apart. Therefore, Prabhupada actually gave the importance on the institution, not on himself. And we notice also in America, at that time, there was a tremendous spiritual awareness, or awareness for or a seeking for a counterculture in America. At that time, quite a few Indian spiritual leaders went to America. And they all set up their organizations after their own names. Like Mahesh Jogi, Rajneesh, and Bal Jogi, Chinmayananda, and so on and so forth. And everybody knew that this is the personality. Mahesh Jogi, Chinmayananda, Bal Jogi, and so on and so forth. But when it came to Hare Krishna movement, who is the personality? They didn't even know. Srila Prabhupada did not really push himself forward. Srila Prabhupada didn't put himself in the center of the institution, in the center of that happening. Prabhupada put the institution, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, as the institution. And from the very beginning, Prabhupada pointed out the importance of collectively managing that society. And Prabhupada himself made himself a member of that society. Prabhupada created the GBC, and Prabhupada told that he himself is a member of the GBC. Not the head of the GBC, but he is just another member of the GBC. In this way, Srila Prabhupada actually pointed out the importance of this collective management. Although he himself is the founder acharya, but he assumed the simple and humble position of a member of the body. And also Srila Prabhupada pointed out time and time again that this ISKCON is his body. Now we can see that if ISKCON is Srila Prabhupada's body, then the soul of this institution is Srila Prabhupada himself. And Prabhupada, in his last days, time and time again, he reminded the devotees to show his love by their cooperation. Asked his devotees to show their love for him by cooperating to keep the institution together, to keep ISKCON together. Your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate with each other. Actually, those days, devotees' love for Prabhupada was so profound and so overwhelming. And that's why Prabhupada, like everybody, used to express his love for Srila Prabhupada through writing, through words, through action. And Prabhupada's response to that was, if you really love me, then cooperate with each other. And that will be the display of your, proper display of your love. Because Prabhupada saw that it is very important that we hold this institution together. If ISKCON remains together, then Krishna consciousness movement will spread all over the world. But if we somehow fail to keep this ISKCON together, then the preaching will stop. And we don't have to go very far. We can see from Gaudiya Math, although it was a very dynamic movement at one time during Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time, but when they gave up the spirit of collectively working together to push Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, and they caught up with their own interests or own little organization or temple, then the preaching stopped. Now Prabhupada said that after an acharya leaves the planet, there's bound to be crisis. And the crisis actually came in this way. Like the crisis is that we will fail to push on his mission properly. And as I was mentioning yesterday, that, or I think in the class this morning, the Kali actually is the arch enemy of Sankirtan, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. And Kali's most dangerous weapon is quarrel. This movement is Kali's worst enemy. And naturally Kali will try to defeat this movement. And Kali will fail one in his attacks, one after another. And finally, what Kali will do is try to create dissension among devotees. And as a result of that, due to the fight between the devotees, this institution or this movement will become weak. And this is how Kali is going to destroy this movement. That's why Srila Prabhupada so emphatically requested us that we remain united, we'll do cooperate. Cooperate means we have to give up our selfish interests and just look for the society's interest, Srila Prabhupada's interest, Krishna's interest. And if we can make that sacrifice, then this movement will become very, very powerful. Now, after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, the crisis actually came in various ways. And my personal observation is, the first problem that our society faced was a system that was implemented soon after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, which has been later known as Zonal Acharya system. Like Srila Prabhupada was the founder Acharya of this movement. And when he was present, he was in his exclusive position of the highest authority in this movement. He was the leader of this movement. And he was the spiritual master of this movement. But after Srila Prabhupada left the planet, then a number of leading devotees of the movement assumed the position of initiating spiritual master, and they kind of assume the same kind of worship and same kind of position as Srila Prabhupada used to have. And actually it became even worse because Prabhupada was not present and they were present. And like one of the things that kind of created a lot of controversy at that time was simultaneous Guru Puja. Unlike today, I mean, of course, fortunately, we have got rid of those arrangements. Like, there used to be the Vasasans of the zonal guru's Vasasan, which was practically identical to Srila Prabhupada's Vasasan. Maybe few fraction of an inch shorter than Srila Prabhupada's. And the Guru Puja used to go on simultaneously. Like Prabhupada's Guru Puja and the present Guru's Guru Puja. So that actually kind of gives an impression that they were as good as Srila Prabhupada and they are actually having the same kind of worship. And anyway, since then we can see a record of continuous loss in ISKCON. Actually, when these gurus assumed their position as the guru, then those who were in leadership position but did not become gurus, they were the first ones to leave the ISKCON movement. They are very powerful personalities, very, very powerful individuals, but because they didn't become guru, not all, but many of them, or we can say some of them, left. Then those who did not line up with the gurus, the godbrothers, those who didn't line up with the gurus in some areas, they were driven out of the movement because they didn't line up. They didn't become obedient. They didn't submit to the leadership. And then some of the gurus started to fall down. And then their defeat this movement. And Kali will fail one in his attacks, one after another. And finally, what Kali will do is try to create dissension among devotees. And as a result of that, due to the fight between the devotees, this institution or this movement will become weak. And this is how Kali is going to destroy this movement. That's why Srila Prabhupada so emphatically requested us that we remain united. We'll do cooperate. Cooperate means we have to give up our selfish interests and just look for the society's interest, Srila Prabhupada's interest, Krishna's interest. And if we can make that sacrifice, then this movement will become very, very powerful. Now, after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, the crisis actually came in various ways. And my personal observation is, the first problem that our society faced was a system that was implemented soon after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, which has been later known as zonal acharya system. Like Srila Prabhupada was the founder acharya of this movement, and when he was present, he was in his exclusive position of the highest authority in this movement. He was the leader of this movement. And he was the spiritual master of this movement. But after Srila Prabhupada left the planet, then a number of leading devotees of the movement assumed the position of initiating spiritual master. and they kind of assume the same kind of worship and same kind of position as Srila Prabhupada used to have. And actually it became even worse because Prabhupada was not present and they were present. And like one of the things that kind of created a lot of controversy at the time was simultaneous Guru Puja. Like, unlike today, I mean, of course, fortunately, we have got rid of those arrangements. Like, they used to be the Vasasans of the zonal Guru's Vasasan, which was practically identical to Srila Prabhupada's Vasasan. Maybe few fraction of an inch shorter than Srila Prabhupada's. And the Guru Puja used to go on simultaneously. Like Prabhupada's Guru Puja and the present Guru's Guru Puja. So that actually kind of gives an impression that they were as good as Srila Prabhupada and they are actually having the same kind of worship. And anyway, since then we can see a record of continuous loss in ISKCON. Actually, when these gurus assume their position as the guru, then those who were in leadership position but did not become gurus, they were the first ones to leave the ISKCON movement. They are very powerful personalities, very, very powerful individuals, but because they didn't become guru, not all, but many of them, or we can say some of them, left. Then those who did not line up with the gurus, the God brothers, those who didn't line up with the gurus in some areas, they were driven out of the movement because they didn't line up. They didn't become obedient. They didn't submit to the leadership. And then some of the gurus started to fall down. And then their disciples started to leave the movement. And that was actually the very, very big blow to the movement. When a guru left, guru fell down, in hundreds their disciples left. And many areas where the gurus left, the whole area became crippled. And then in 87, there was a reform, but after 12 or 13 years, when we analyze, then we see that although we thought that it was a reform, but it was not actually a reform. It was watering down the same mistaken system. And today, our society has become considerably weak because of that mistake. And so this is one of the, there I noted down some of the problems that our society faced after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance. One is zonal acharya system, then abnormal worship of some devotees who assume the position of spiritual masters, neglect and abuse of devotees, like the gurus got the worship as lofty as that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in many, many areas. Whereas devotees were neglected, our children were neglected, the women were neglected, the women were used and abused in many ways. And to give an example, one very important person visited our temple somewhere, I don't want to mention the name of the temple. And She was a lady. So she, after one day, after one day there, she said she lost all faith in this movement. And the reason she gave was the lifestyle that the spiritual master had and the lifestyle of the general devotees had. I mean, there's such a gulf of difference, such a big difference in those two lifestyle, that she lost all faith in this movement. That's just to make this point. Neglect and abuse of devotees. Unfair means of collecting money. During Srila Prabhupada's time, our main collection or our main source of income was actually Prabhupada's books. But through the books, Srila Prabhupada actually built Vrindavan Temple, Bombay Temple, and he established the movement all over the world. And Prabhupada himself told that book business is the best business. And books are the basis, so as the books went out, money came, and along with that, the preaching was going on. But soon after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, the leaders introduced a kind of paraphernalia distribution. And one of the pioneers of this was a close friend of mine, and once he actually told me, like, how he got into that. He said that he just came across a stock of LPs in a record manufacturing place. Like a few thousand or maybe even, I mean, a colossal number of records. And they bought them for a few cents. These LPs, he bought a few cents each. And he felt that the devotees, the Sankirtan devotees are such good salesmen, they can go and sell these, because the book selling was becoming a little difficult. So they introduced the selling of these records. And in order to sell those records, they had to lie. Like they would say that, this is the latest album by George Harrison. And whereas George Harrison was nowhere near that album. And in this way, they would just, the thing that would cost a few cents, they would sell it for a few dollars. And a lot of money started to come in. Then they introduced paintings in Hong Kong. I mean, in Canada, there was a big supplier who was importing paintings from Hong Kong. And the big 3-foot by 4-foot painting would cost them $10. And these Sankirtan devotees, so-called Sankirtan devotees, would go out and claim that they are the painters, they are the artists, they have come to sell the paintings. This is their work. And they would fetch an incredible price. The painting that would cost $10, they would sell it for $200. And in this way, an incredible amount of money started to come in. But as a result of that, book distribution stopped. And devotee spiritual standard deteriorated. And as a result of that, our society faced a major crisis. And so this is another thing was a change up. Anyway, I don't want to get into that. But, you know, like, I'm just giving the very basic understanding because the point is, like, to make you all aware of, in one hand, we should become aware of our glorious heritage. But at the same time, it's important that we become aware of the mistakes we made, which made us pay a very heavy price. So we have to recognize both the sides and recognize what not to do. Then fall down of gurus. The gurus started to fall down, and that caused a lot of damage. Conflict between devotees. Srila Prabhupada wanted us to cooperate, but instead devotees started to fight. So that also caused a lot of damage. Then posthumous guru system, like one doctrine has come up that Prabhupada would continue to give initiation even after his disappearance. And that understanding gained some popularity and start to surface from time and time again. This actually came up first in 1988. A group of devotees, they felt that gurus are not good enough, the gurus are falling down, and other gurus also will fall down, so this is causing a lot of damage to the society. So let Prabhupada continue to give initiation. Everybody will become Prabhupada's disciples. It's a safe course, but the problem is that there is no precedence of this system in the past. There is no scriptural evidence, and nor did Prabhupada himself say anything emphatically about this. And the last one is, one of the points that I made is the lack of faith in leadership in ISKCON, and as a result of that, ISKCON devotees are seeking guidance outside of ISKCON. And some individuals from outside of ISKCON, they're coming and practically cleaning up. ISKCON devotees who have become disillusioned, who have lost their faith in leadership of ISKCON, they're finding a recourse. They are thinking that, well, here is the real shelter. And they're leaving ISKCON and going away. And so these are, to name a few. Okay, so it was a great privilege of mine to have this opportunity to conduct the seminar with you all. And I don't know how much I have been able to help you, but I hope that you'll find some benefit from the classes that I gave you in last few days. And if you want to continue, if you still have questions or you want to continue, you can communicate with me through email. And if you have any question, you can, that comes up afterwards. Then please feel free to write to me and I'll try my best to answer your questions. And thank you very much. Does anybody have any question? Yeah. Oh, change-up. Change-up is, you see, the devotees, when they would distribute books in America or other places, mainly it happened actually in America, they would get small bills and coins, right? So they would go to somebody who is favorable, willing to take a book. They'll say, look, I have this stack of $1 bills. Will you please change it for a bigger one? And so then the person will say, okay, fine. And then not only they will give him the small bills and get a big one, but sometimes they would say, oh, I have only $6. Can you give me the $10 or $20? he would give him, say, $12 and say, why don't you give $20, that $20 bill? Consider it to be a donation for a good cause. Right? Or sometimes they would give somebody $60 and ask for the $100 bill. And in this way, they would change up. And to give you an idea about what change up was, I didn't see it, but I heard that in one American newspaper, there was a cartoon that an ISKCON devotee is holding somebody upside down and all the coins and money is coming out of his pocket and he is collecting them. We should always remember the dharma in this age is standing on one leg. And what is that leg on which dharma is standing in this age? Truthfulness. So we should never deviate from that path of honesty. We should never become dishonest. Because if we do that, then we are actually breaking the last leg of dharma. On the other hand, we should be very upright, very straightforward, honest. And that's what Brahmin is. Yes, Janmashtami Prabhu.
I was wondering if you could give us an optimistic view for the future, which may be some mistakes. One could honestly evaluate
if there are some good ones, but there also may be some mistakes. Right? Yes. Good. Yeah. You see, the optimistic view that I can, or assurance that I can give, is what I believe in myself. Is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that this movement is going to spread all over the world. And we should be 100% convinced that since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is going to happen. So no matter whatever happens, we should not give up our faith. We should continue with full conviction. And then the next thing I would say is, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted, and that prediction came through Srila Prabhupada. So from that we can understand that Prabhupada is the personality that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent to achieve that. And although Srila Prabhupada's Bapu has left this planet, Prabhupada's physical form has left the planet, but Prabhupada is still present in ISKCON. And it is through ISKCON that this prediction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will become literally fulfilled. That is, in every town and village. Srila Prabhupada spread it all over the world, but to every town and village, it's yet to happen. And that will happen through ISKCON. Therefore, we should have implicit faith in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction, and we should have our implicit faith in ISKCON. And with that, we should carry on. Personally, I consider the three instructions of Srila Prabhupada the most important. And I've derive tremendous benefit out of those three instructions. One is, no matter whatever happens, don't leave ISKCON. The second one is, your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate with each other. And the third one is, the GBC is the ultimate managing authority of ISKCON. And all along, I tried to follow these three instructions of Srila Prabhupada, and I can say, I had been saved from very, very big calamities. If I didn't stick to these three instructions of Srila Prabhupada, I don't know what would have happened to me. I mean, I could have been out there, away from ISKCON. Yes? Pardon? The GBC is the ultimate managing authority of ISKCON. The governing body commission, the governing body, is the ultimate managing authority of ISKCON. Krishna Prem Prabhu? Yeah.
I was just wondering, when you were explaining before, very nicely, when Lord Chaitanya, he appeared, and then it was only because of some of the disciples that were able to keep on with the legacy of the Vaishnava philosophy and culture then there was a time that so it seems that then, but you know, the Guru came, like you said, and then actually I'm reading Jai Dharma and praying.
Right.
And he really gave me a lot of inspiration on how he dealt with the reality of the particular type of situation that was happening at that time. It seems that anyway, there was no connection between Shivananda and Narottam Das Thakur and you know, those three last, let's say, disciples, which are they. So, of course, I agree with you, and this is the hope that everybody of us in ISKCON we have in our hearts, that ISKCON is the future. But there's no evidence.
Okay, yeah, okay. Good point, good point. Yeah, so my response to that will be, you see, in order to effectively spread Krishna consciousness all over the world in every town and village, we need an institution. Agreed? Right, we need an institution. Now, if ISKCON, say, let us consider, like, say, ISKCON falls apart, then that would mean that there will be another institution which is better than ISKCON to make that happen?
No, but you said, what I wanted to say, that those who revived the institution of Lord Chaitanya, they were not in an institution.
Oh, they were not in, oh, I see, okay. Yeah, but you see, like, we can see that's why they're, you know, like, the effect of their preaching did not last for very long. Right? Say, I'll give you an example, you know, say, Gaudiya Math actually disintegrated very soon after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance. And you know something? Within 3 days after his disappearance, they started to fight. And whereas ISKCON, almost 22 years after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, is still going strong. I mean, that, you know, like that international society, the worldwide preaching, in spite of all difficulties, is still going on. And personally, I feel like, you know, that also I want to add about my optimism, that we are going through a difficult phase now, but it's going to go up again. It's going to go up again. Because, you see, the institution of ISKCON is still together. And this society has many sincere souls. ISKCON actually, that is actually the most encouraging factor, I would say, is that this movement has so many very, very committed, very dedicated devotees, you know. And it is because of them that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will save this movement and make this movement to carry on. We are going through difficulties, but, you know, what to do? Like in a war. When there is a war, there will be some loss, right? And so we are going through, you know, sometimes in a war, you have to retreat. You are defeated. You retreat and then you gather your strength and come back and attack.
So this is your strategy for the future?
Yeah. Because, you know, like, to make the movement spread effectively, we need an institution. Because you see, a personality like Srila Prabhupada comes only once in a blue moon. And, you know, like, and this, you know, this kind of personality, you know, it's so rare. So now what he gave us, we have to carry on with that. And I will even go to the extent of saying that what Jesus Christ is to Christianity, what Muhammad is to Islamism, Srila Prabhupada should be that to ISKCON. And then only we'll see a glorious ISKCON that's spreading all over the world in every town and village. And that's why it's important that we uphold Srila Prabhupada's glorious position. Because that's our asset, you see. Like, where is the personality who's in 10 years' time, you know, spread Krishna consciousness all over the world? Where is the personality who wrote hundreds of books? Where is the personality, you know, who, whatever he did, you know, did it in the most perfect way. And that is our asset. And that is the legacy that we have to carry. You know, Prabhupada is our greatest asset. And that's the asset that we have to cash on if we really want to be successful. But the trouble starts, you know, when we obscure Srila Prabhupada with ourselves. Like we stand in front of Prabhupada and obscure Srila Prabhupada from the eyes of others. And that's what actually causes the damage to the movement. And that is why, you know, like what is needed is, like put Srila Prabhupada up there and let us all take a humble position out down here. And the world will recognize, you know, I mean, who am I? I mean, what the world is going to think of me? They're not going to be impressed. But when I present Srila Prabhupada, and everybody will be impressed. So why don't we do that? Isn't that the normal thing to do? Isn't that the intelligent thing to do? That's the big question. Right. Anyway, why didn't you do it? That's not the question. Let's consider how we're going to do it. Okay. Yes, Ruben. Yeah, you see, for a spiritual life, the worst enemy or the greatest obstacle is actually false ego. So if we really want to be spiritually effective, we have to get rid of our false ego. And can you imagine, you know, if we are living in a society where nobody has a false ego, then you have been in the spiritual sky. Okay, ma'am, before you, Manjari, I'll take Leela Madhuri. She actually raised her hand first. Yeah, okay. Yeah, the scripture says that the guru should be worshipped as good as God. But what is that worship? That worship mainly is actually an internal thing. Worship is not necessarily an external thing. Like, for example, you know, what kind of worship did Rupa Goswami take? Right? What kind of worship Raghunath Das Goswami take? Even in the recent past, you know, like what kind of worship Bhakti Vinod Thakur take? What kind of worship Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur take? Now, so from that we can understand that when they're talking about the worship as good as God, that means the faith in the heart of the disciples that my guru is the bona fide representative of Krishna and he is going to give me Krishna. And that submission, that is the real worship. But instead of that, if just the fanfare becomes the main thing, and as I was telling, like things like, you know, soon after Prabhupada's disappearance, like simultaneous Guru Puja and so on and so forth, did hurt the movement very badly and did obscure Srila Prabhupada's position. Now, on the other hand, like if we just recognize the contribution that Srila Prabhupada made for us, to us, and remain grateful to Srila Prabhupada for that, That will be the real worship. Like we can consider, do the Christians worship Jesus Christ? Right? But what kind of worship? This is the worship of their faith. That they know Jesus is the Savior. And if they follow Jesus, you know, they'll make it back to Godhead. I mean, I don't know whether they have any understanding of back to Godhead. But, so this faith is what is important. And that's why, you know, and that faith should be linked to Srila Prabhupada. Like, why a guru in ISKCON is a guru? Because he is transmitting Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Therefore, I mean, who is the main personality that we should become grateful to? Naturally, Srila Prabhupada. So that's the kind of worship that I'm talking about. And the other kind of worship I'm saying is better that we get rid of. Because just the external fanfare doesn't take us very far. And it simply attracts a bunch of neophytes. Doesn't really go very far. Yes, Manjuri? Yeah. Right. Okay. Yes. You see, that's why, you know, the leaders have a very important responsibility. That important responsibility is that they must transmit the right understanding. Now, it's not a matter of quoting the scriptures or finding some reasons behind, logical reason behind doing something. What really matters is our sincere intentions. If the intention is sincere, we may make mistakes, but we'll become rectified. And others also will not suffer the loss so bad. So, you know, like you can always find, like even Shankaracharya, he was quoting scriptures to establish Mayavad. But is Mayavad the ultimate conclusion of the scriptures? No. But then why did people accept it? Because Shankaracharya was presenting it. Right? They accepted him as the authority, and whatever he said, they accepted it. Right? Therefore, it is, what is important is to become the transparent via medium. And the transparent via medium means understand what our previous acharyas wanted and act according to their understanding. And that's the meaning of becoming a puppet in the hands of the spiritual master. Puppet in the hands of the previous acharyas. Do you still have some doubts? Yes.
How to protect them?
So that's what I'm saying. Who will protect them? Who will protect them? The new bhaktas will protect them, or the leaders will protect them? Okay, right. So that's what I'm saying, that the leaders have to lead properly. The leaders have to understand the intentions and the motives and the objectives of the previous acharyas. And if not all the previous acharyas, at least his own guru's intentions and objectives and mission. And if he does that, his followers will never go astray. Falguna? Oh my, it's already 20 past. Okay, last question.
Since Maya seems all these different problems that we have gone in this as many of them have come from leaders misinterpreting the Parampara, and all these different problems created a lack of trust that many of the people don't trust them anymore in the leaders. How to regain that trust?
In order to regain, the leaders have to become the transparent via medium. Right? The onus actually lies on the leaders, because they have to lead. The followers are ready to be followed. They're ready to follow. But, you know, those who are guiding them, they have to give them proper guidance. Like, I'll give an example. Like, when the change-up was going on, maybe somebody started the change-up. But if the leader interfered and said, look, this is deviation from truth. This is breaking the leg of dharma, last leg of dharma. Stop it. Then we could have saved that trouble. If the leaders thought that, say, Prabhupada wanted us to distribute books. Sankirtan devotees are not just a bunch of salesmen and saleswomen. They are actually meant to, they are distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. They're preachers. And that is the most important mission that they have. That's the most important responsibility they have. And never ever deviate them from that responsibility. Then that trouble wouldn't have been there. If the leaders, those who are representing Srila Prabhupada at that time, felt that Prabhupada is my eternal Lord and Master, I am his humble servant, how can I ever take worship in front of him while his worship is going on? Disciples are coming and giving me the flowers, and if they felt that that is not right, then that problem wouldn't have been there. So the main thing is that we have, first of all, we have to be honest with ourselves. That is the most important consideration. Yes, Janmashtami Prabhu, what do you say? I mean, we are going over time.
Yes, try to do last
class. Okay. So, I'm also leaving tomorrow morning. So, please put the questions in the internet. I'll positively answer the questions.